music from Point of Grace, their song The Great Divide. 8.5 minutes after the hour, Tuesday morning, and we're delighted to welcome Dr. Don Clark to the studios. Actually, he's not here. He's actually in Garden Valley, Texas. He just sounds like he's here. But we can see him and you can't, and I could describe him to you. Let's see. He's wearing a pair of headphones, got a microphone there. He's got a well-groomed beard, and it's silver, along with the hair on his head. Both of them are silver. And you're looking in fine fettle today, Don.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah, maybe that it's a beautiful day here. It has been for a couple of days now.
You mean like sunshine and warmth, like double-digit warmth?
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, it's really? It got up to 70s in the 70s yesterday.
Oh my.
And it'll probably do the same today, and then Wednesday it's supposed to be a little cooler.
Yeah. So like 60 maybe, huh?
Yeah, well, like 60. Well, temperature will plunge. Mid 50s.
Okay. All right.
We consider mid 50s cool or cold. You know, anything below 50 is cold.
Dr. Don is a biochemist and a member of the board of Creation Moments. Brings us a lot, and we usually talk about things like creation and evolution and faith and science and such things, and the topic today kind of impacts on that, we could say. They found this rock in the Moroccan desert, and scientists, being the kind of people they are, named it NWA 7034. But others apparently refer to it as the Black Beauty because it's a black rock. Tell us about this stone, Don.
Well, it's a black rock. They took spectrophotometric measurements of the rock. And the Mars probe actually did the same thing of rock on Mars. And so they found out, well, you know, if you scrape the surface of the rock of Mars, of course, Mars got this red dust all over it. You know, that's why it looks like a red planet. That's why it's called the red planet. Mm-hmm. But if you, in some areas, if you go beneath the Martian surface, you find this red rock. So the scientists made the connection that, this rock probably came from Mars.
Oh, just like that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And so, you know, from the composition and from, you know, the looks of the rock.
Well, they could conclude with after the mass spectrometer analyzed this thing that the rocks are made of the same stuff. That much.
You can certainly analyze for the elements and the crystals, you know, that are in the rocks, and find out that, you know, that they're similar. Of course, they think this was a meteor from Mars that came directly from Mars, and so they, you know, they're dating the rock at 4.4 billion years, you know, old, because you know, they think that Mars is that old. So
wait a minute. No, this rock they found in the Moroccan desert, they have just because they looked up at Mars and said, oh, that looks like it's about 4 billion years old. Therefore, this rock must also be 4.4 billion years old.
They don't give you the details on how they dated it. It was probably a little more scientific than that.
Okay.
You know, you could do isotopic dating, you know, with the rock and find out but they don't mention in the article whether they did that.
Okay, yeah.
They're assuming that, you know, it is 4.4 billion years. They've got to keep their story straight. I don't know how they dated the rock.
No, well, yeah, by the way, this interestingly, the story is in the International Business Times story on February the 2nd. We will link to it when we post the podcast on our website, so you can read the article, too. They got a neat picture there of rocks on the Martian surface, and apparently if you kind of blow the dust away, underneath are these black rocks that look a whole lot like this rock from the Moroccan desert, and apparently there's the chemical tests that say, well, this is chemically virtually identical to those rocks on Mars. But Don, by what logic can they conclude that the rock came from Mars? I mean, what if every planet has rocks just like this? What if there's a source of these rocks out in space that just shoots these things out like cannonballs and they land wherever? How would it get from Mars to here, for example?
That's an interesting question. Well, yeah, two things pop in my mind when you ask that question. One is, as you said, is the rocks on Mars? Well, let's assume that the rocks on Mars are the same as the rock that we have on Earth. Mm-hmm. How do you know that it didn't come from someplace else? In other words, how do we know that there wasn't some other event that took place that shattered the Martian surface, with a bunch of rocks, and it also some of that rock actually wound up on the Earth's surface.
Or is it possible that something big hit Mars and the collision spun stuff off of Mars?
Well, that's possible too. Okay. Now, there's been a lot of speculation that there was a planet, for example, in between Mars and Jupiter at one point in time in the early history of our solar system, and something happened to that planet that it shattered and exploded, then that is the source, for example, it's the source of the meteor belts that we have in between Mars and Jupiter. Mm-hmm. We still have remnants of that, not enough to make a full-size planet with. But if a planet had exploded, one of the things that you would expect to see, for example, is that the Martian surface would be cratered on one side and not so much on the other side. And interestingly, that's exactly what we see. Mm-hmm. We see craters on one side of the Martian surface, but 80% of the craters or more are on one surface.
But does Mars not rotate on its axis like Earth does?
Well, it does, but as a matter of fact, it's got a pretty similar rotation as Earth, mm-hmm. but it's
smaller, somewhat smaller than the Earth, though.
Right. So that is the key to why this material is only on one surface, because if you had a catastrophic event, for example, and it showered meteorites, pieces of a planet, on the surface, and it happened very quickly, then you would expect to see, craters on one side of Mars and not the other side of the Mars.
Seems like we got to get pretty picky to explain this event then. I mean, it's had to happen quickly. Everything hits at once. So that would suggest it would result from either an orbiting body that hit or something that exploded beyond Mars.
Right, exactly. Okay. And that's what I'm suggesting. One suggestion is that it was indeed another planet that exploded. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at the alignment of planets within our solar system, they're about the kind of equidistant from each other in the sense that you've got, you've got Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, mm-hmm. The orbit, actually Mars and Earth kind of pair up, and their orbits, at one point in time, which brings up another subject, which we'll talk about in a minute, but at one point in time, the Earth's orbit looked like it was, it orbited the sun in 360 days. Mm-hmm. Well, the Martian orbit looked like it was 720 days, so it was twice as long. And the orbit of Mars's position is about double that of where the Earth is. Mm-hmm. So as you go out from the planets, each position of the planet is double the previous positions. Well, if you double Mars's position, you don't get any planets. You have to go further out to get to Jupiter. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why they suggest that that there was a planet in between Mars and Jupiter.
Okay. Now, do we know that this is there's only one of these rocks on Earth?
I don't know that. I don't know that from the article. If there was just one, or if there's multiple rocks, for example.
Yeah, well, it would seem that would sign, seal, and deliver the case that it came from some other planet if there's only one, you know? If there aren't other rocks like it.
Right, exactly. No, they definitely think it's extraterrestrial and it looks like a meteor. I mean, it's a piece of a meteor for sure. And then the question is, where did the meteor come from?
Unless it's the last one left, Don.
Well, yeah, the last one. That's interesting.
See, there. Well, I'm thinking back. We were talking about Dr. Walter Brown's theory of, at the time of the Great Flood, how about 3% of the Earth's mass was ejected into space. That would have been rocks and water and all kinds of stuff. And he theorizes that it was this material that was ejected from the Earth during the Great Flood that formed the comets, the meteorites, the asteroids. And he's pretty convinced that that's the way it happened, which means that it would suggest that maybe the Mars on rocks, rocks on Mars came from here.
Well, that is one suggestion, for example. Mm-hmm. Whether that is the case, there's a lot of people that disagree with Dr. Brown, and there's some. I mean, the thing that we talked about before was some of the the evidence for, there's a lot of water in this
deuterium levels and so forth. Yeah, that's
right.
It's a different subject. But with all that matter coming out of the Earth, you'd think Mars, being a neighbor, might have inherited some of that, pulled it into its orbit, and it eventually fell there. Assuming he's right, what do you think? Do you think his theory holds water, so to speak?
Well, it may explain some of the bodies out in space. I don't think it explains all of the bodies in our solar system, for example, for sure. So maybe some of the the moons of some of the other planets, were possibly formed that way. But whether or not all the moons were, well, that's another thing. And whether or not God formed them that way from the beginning, of course, there's no way of knowing. What we do know that there was a catastrophic event about 4,400 years ago, which triggered the flood. And one possibility for that event, of course, is a close encounter with Mars. Now, it's interesting that the time scale, for example, our year, which is three hundred and sixty-five and a quarter days long now, wasn't always that way. It wasn't always the case. We had, for example, the year. If you go back in recorded history, of course, the Jewish calendar is based on a 360-day year, but there were a number of civilizations, the Assyrians, the Chaldeans, the Egyptians, the Hebrews, the Persians, the Greeks, the Phoenicians, the Chinese, the Mayans, the Hindus. I mean, the list kind of goes on. Where their year was based on 360-day, years for Earth. But something apparently happened in 701 BC because they started changing the calendars. And it went from 360 to 364. Then there was other corrections made, and there was different ways of lining up the Earth with the Sun and calculating what the Earth's rotation around the Sun was.
Are you suggesting this could have been a celestial event or a global event of some kind in that year, or is it just that people got smarter and were able to measure the days more accurately, perhaps?
Well, no, I don't think people got smarter, because what happened, I think there was an actual shift. And how do we know that there was an actual shift in the time frame? And it appears that there was a corresponding shift in Mars's rotation around the Sun as well. And it's interesting. We have an event called, for example, the Joshua's the Longest Day, or the Long Day of Joshua. Mm-hmm. And as if you recall from that particular story, in the Bible, that as long as Moses was holding his hands up, Joshua was winning. And then when Moses started to drop his hands, Joshua was losing the battle. And it wound up that Joshua needed more time to win the battle. And so God, instead of, the normal day passing, something happened that it looked like the sun stood still. And so that the day was much longer, and that the battle could continue. So what type of an event, could have taken place for that to happen? Well, if Mars came in close proximity with the Earth, what happens is the two planets begin to exchange energy with one another, and it could have been that the rotational energy of the Earth exchanged with rotational energy of Mars, and the two planets, kind of slowed down a little bit, not only going around the Earth, but also, going around the Sun, but actually, with respect to the rotation. It's also interesting that, for example, the angle, we know that Earth is tilted on its axis about 23.5 degrees. Well, it's interesting that Mars has the same tilt. And you kind of scratch your head and say, well, why is that? Well, planets in precession, with one another, will tend to equalize their tilts and other aspects of the planet.
You're saying one has an effect on the other, then, or the mutual effect there. Yeah,
right. Is it possible, for example, that Mars could have come into close contact, very close contact with Earth, which actually started Noah's flood and caused the plates to break up and things of that nature? Hmm. We don't know, and it's hard to even go back and calculate. I mean, we've got fairly sophisticated calculation methods for planet rotations, and if you take a standard calculation, you'll say, well, okay, yeah, the planets are a little bit closer, but you may not come up with the right answer. And the reason why you may not is because of this energy exchange between the planets. Mm-hmm. So unless you account for the energy exchange between the planets, your orbital calculations will probably not be correct.
Well, that's interesting. Now, you mentioned that this event, I think you mentioned about 700 BC, but of course for Joshua and Moses to be involved, it would have had to have been maybe
much earlier.
1400. Now, does this happen every 700 years or so?
It happens. Actually, the close encounter with Mars and Earth actually happened, I believe it's about on the order of 54 years, every 54 years.
Oh, okay.
The orbits of both Mars and Earth are such a way that Mars is the closest, to Earth at that mm-hmm. point in time. There's all kinds of inferences with regard to Mars as far as certain events happening on Earth and why Mars has its name, for example. Mars is a sun god, is a god mm-hmm. in Greek mythology.
It was Apollo in Greece, and then Mars in the Roman language, in Latin, I suppose.
Right, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's how it originally got its name, but it's always thought to be a warring planet, and because things would happen on Earth on certain times. And they've actually, it was a lot of calendars are based, they begin their years, for example, either on March 25th or on October 25th. And those those dates happen to correspond to the dates that Mars and Earth would have been in close proximity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, new things kind of happening, bringing on, in quote, the new year. And will this be a catastrophic year or will it be an okay year? And, of course, the closer, you know, Mars is to Earth, then the more catastrophic things would happen on Earth. You'd have such things as tremendous tidal shifts, for example. So the coastal areas would be affected. You would have, earthquakes or a greater number of earthquakes during that time. Because, again, the tides in the pull of one planet on the other, would cause that effect. I mean, it's the same mm-hmm. effect we get from the moon, except that the moon doesn't have as drastic effects as a huge planet like Mars would coming in close proximity of the Earth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of these things are rather interesting, point to a possibility that sometime in the past history, when Mars was in close proximity, either Mars got bombarded or Mars and Earth got bombarded with this exploding planet, and part of the Martian surface got kicked off and landed up on the Earth's surface because we were pretty close by, or that piece that we have found here in this article is actually just a remnant of the planet mm-hmm. that had exploded. So it's pretty interesting. Now, the other interesting thing to suggest that Mars came in close proximity or had been in close proximity with the Earth and apparently fairly close proximity is found in Gulliver's travels. And when Gulliver visits Laputa, and Jonathan Swift describes two rotating bodies around the planet that are exactly that happen to be exactly the same size and description as two of the moons of Mars. Mm-hmm. And that would have been impossible during Jonathan Swift's lifetime because a telescope wasn't developed until about 150 years later that could say, oh, look, there are two moons of Mars to begin mm-hmm. with. People didn't know that there were two moons, you know, on Mars.
Well, I still didn't know that, so it's news to me.
That discovery didn't happen, you know, until 1877. Mm-hmm. How did Jonathan Swift know about that, and why did he write about it in such detail? And could be so accurate if somebody in the past hadn't seen it, and he, Jonathan Swift, may have found it in some ancient records, described from a time when Mars came in close contact, you know, with Earth, so close that you could see the moons. I mean, these moons are tiny; they're like 8 and 14 miles apart, in diameter. So it's quite interesting that we have these remnants of details around that suggest, yes, indeed, you know, this type of an event not only happened once, but happened quite often in history. And so it caused people to be, you know, disturbed, whatever it was. And they took special precautions to try to figure out when the event was going to happen in the future. And it's possible that, we know that Stonehenge is a observatory, for example, and was Stonehenge built to actually try to figure out when Mars and Earth were going to come into close contact so the people could prepare, because if they didn't, then, you know, you'd have all these earthquakes and you'd be, you know, you could be squished and everything else.
In other words, Stonehenge may have been inspired by an earlier ancient occurrence that, that had been passed down through the literature of the people, or the folk tale, to legends, and the current population there decided to approach it scientifically. And do measurements and react. What's interesting to me here is how astronomy, the discipline of astronomy, gets crossed with the study of ancient literature, and one can inform the other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, of course, one of the ancient literatures that we have is the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, the Bible doesn't say that, well, you know, the Mars came into close contact. But we do have astronomical, I mean, we do have catastrophic events. And one of the greatest catastrophic, you know, events described in the Bible, of course, is the Great Flood. And we have other evidence of strange things happening, like, for example, like I mentioned with Joshua's longest day, or the long day of Joshua.
Mm-hmm. The sun stood still on that day, we're told. And this may be a scientific explanation for that very thing. So the other thing that occurs to me is when you read something that appears to be fantastic in your study of ancient literature, an old work, an old poem, and you think that, boy, that's somebody made that up, you might start wondering if there wasn't some actual natural event that inspired that story, and that was their way of interpreting it, their way of making sense of it. It's funny how it all knits together at some point. The story, Black Beauty, the meteorite, NWA 7034, again, it's an International Business Times article, and it's posted at MSN News. We'll give you a link for that in the podcast with Dr. Don a little bit later this morning when it gets up on our website at BrokenRoadRadio.com. There's also a link on BrokenRoadRadio.com. I've got to tell you, it's a link to CreationMoments.com. And Don, of course, a member of the board there. And Creation Moments exists to provide you with scientific explanations for young earth creationist positions and thinking. And many of you will be surprised to know, yes, there is science on that side of the story. And one of the great, great places to find it is Creation Moments. They have DVDs and they have radio programs. Of course, we have Ian Taylor's Creation Moments here a couple times a day. And I think, Don, I think that program's on some 700 radio stations now across the country. And also,
More than that. We're at least in the United States, we're on like 1,300, 13 radio stations. So, and we're on the radio stations in the Spanish, Hispanic speaking, you know, countries. And in Russia, we have a fellow that actually translates the programs into Russian and does a Russian version, you know, of the program. So, we're an international ministry.
Indeed.
I remember, you know, when I was in Africa last year, that there was, the people there were interested in the program as well. And I wonder if they ever reached out and got in touch with you.
We'd have to ask Malawi. Wayne whether or not, you know, that was possible. But we have the program available. There's a radio section actually on the website where you can go and actually download the Creation Moments. So anyone in the world could download them. Now, of course, they're in English, but you could download the audio version of it. You can download the script, and if you wanted to take the time to translate it into another language and then to re-record it, you know, you're certainly welcome to do that.
And there's also a YouTube channel now too, where there's actually a video presentation along with the Creation Moments program, and that's a very interesting thing too. Well done. And so Creation Moments, just consider them a valuable resource. And if you want to take this issue of young earth, old earth, seriously, and decide which is the truth, investigate both sides, look at the science of both sides, and see if you can weed through all the heat and smoke that goes on in that discussion. So Don Clark, Dr. Don from Garden Valley, how are the grapes doing down there?
Well, We got into starting the pruning process yesterday, and it's going to be a process. So
Don is involved in inventing Texas wine down there. He's growing.
So grapes. I've got a couple more trellises to put up as well. I actually ordered some more vines yesterday, and so we've got the work is starting.
Okay, well, with the weather what it is, you don't want to waste that good weather. Go out there and plant and dig and prune and do all that stuff and take advantage of that. And I understand that that airline tickets to Dallas are at an all-time low here.
Well, there you go. Yeah, it's after the holidays. Mm-hmm. You can come down anytime.
I found a ticket yesterday. Travelocity got back to me, and there was a ticket for $143.
Whoa!
It's just almost like they're going to pay me to go.
There you go.
That might have been just the charge for your carry-on. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was just like extra luggage not included.
Yeah, Don, we thank you so much. Good to have you here. We'll look forward to chatting with you again next Tuesday. So in the meantime, take care and give our best to the family. Okay.
Okay, will do. It's good. Great being here.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
See you, Don.